Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm living life, man. Doing well. I hope you are as well. Well,
living the life. You know, that's
yeah, that's right.
Give it the full thing. Hey, listen, yep. We got a lot of space stuff to talk about tonight. You know how sometimes we got a lot of space stuff to talk about? Tonight is one of those nights, okay? I want to throw that out there. Because we're doing two things, okay? The show tonight is Final Frontier or The Next Big Thing. So we're going to talk about space as an inspiration to our imaginations and as an object of of scientific scrutiny and wonder and all that good stuff. And then we're going to talk about space as, like, your chance to cash in, okay? And we were talking about this just the other night. I got one word for you, space, right? That's where the money's going to be, young man. So we're going to talk about both aspects of outer space as reflected in some recent news stories. And the reason I packed so many topics in here, Stephen, is, you know, you've been throwing so much news at me. I just thought, well, you know what, we can't afford to do a couple of space shows with everything else we have to talk about. So we just have to bite the bullet and talk about all this incredible space stuff in one show. And you know who benefits from that? That's right, you, the home listener. You get all this space news in one 30-minute show, okay? Yeah. So that's our pledge, is to bring as much space awesomeness as we can on a Monday evening.
Well,
so,
and if you think one of the topics is, not as awesome as the others, hey, hang on. We will be on to the next topic quick because
we're going to be right on
to
the next topic because it's only a
30-minute
show. So we're going to jump right into a Final Frontier space story. Three spiral galaxies creating a new black hole. This is really cool. Some astronomers in Australia have actually confirmed that what's going on about 1.8 billion light years from here, so that's a good chunk of the universe away, probably about, 10% of the total diameter of the universe from us, way out there in space.
Right.
Three galaxies are colliding. We hear about galaxies colliding, but we're actually witnessing it occurring with not two, but three galaxies all coming together at the same time. And it's having some very interesting effects. One is it's creating this huge black hole, a supermassive black hole, they say is about 3 billion times the mass of the sun. And it's having other interesting cosmic effects as well. I mean, get your head around that 3 billion times the mass of the sun black hole. That is a big old black hole. But one of the things that's occurring in that region, you would think, galaxies colliding, massive destruction, right? Especially with that 3 billion times the mass of the sun black hole just sucking everything into place. But counterintuitively, it's actually speeding up the creation of stars, that the presence of the black hole and the fact that all this, galactic stuff is in motion. Yeah, you know, it's like Project Genesis, I guess, in Star Trek 2 and 3. You know, it's a very destructive creation creative destruction, if you will, but a whole bunch of new stars are being created in the process. And interesting for us, those of us observing it, perhaps not those of us whose galaxy is being eaten up, it's creating these huge starbursts, which are in fact making it they're basically lighting the whole thing up, and they're making it easier for these astronomers to see what's going on. So it's quite a show that the universe is putting on for us. And, you know, it's only in the last few years that we've really been able to detect and appreciate this kind of stuff going on. You know, there's probably a lot of this kind of stuff going on out in the universe. Interesting to see this one not up close, but with a relatively up-close understanding of it happening so far away.
It's interesting when we look out that far. Of course, this is not stuff that's happening now. This is stuff that happened 1.8 billion years ago, right? But
that's a good point.
From our vantage point, it's we've got a front row seat. We're getting to see it as if it's happening right now. So, yeah, I wonder how those galaxies are doing now. You know, I mean, I wonder if it's one big galaxy. Or what the end result of these three galaxies colliding will ultimately be. But, yeah, lots of new stars in that region. That's neat.
There should be some projections on that. I'll look into that and see if those astronomers have made a guess as to what happens. You know, they talk about when the Milky Way and Andromeda collide here in a few billion years or whenever it is, that they'll actually pull apart and then come back together and become one galaxy. Maybe the same thing will happen here, or maybe with three of them, one gets away. Who knows? It's interesting phenomenon. I'm sorry, you were going to say something else.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, you know, lots of stars being born here. Whenever we see stellar nurseries, I wonder if there's a black hole to be found. That may be a part of that. At least in some cases. It's interesting, and I think it bears further study. So
entirely possible that there is. I mean, the fact that. What we look at as this, as I mentioned, entirely destructive process seems to be creating stars. Tells you that the universe just can't help itself but create stars. You know, I mean, it's just it's what it's good at.
It works.
Yeah,
huh?
finds a way to do it even in the midst of this destruction. I would not be at all surprised to learn that that there's a big black hole and maybe some other weird stuff going on everywhere we see these stellar nurseries. Anyhow, that is exactly the kind of stuff that you would classify as a big final frontier space story, right? I mean, it's got everything, you know, big black hole, stars being created, galaxies collide, literally galaxies colliding. That's
and it's
all
being
about,
lit up
right?
With starbursts. And when they say starbursts, yeah. I guess they're talking about stars going nova, I guess is what that means.
I believe that's correct, yeah. So stars blowing
right,
up
okay.
and lighting up the scene for us. Kind of a
sad, wild,
scary
yeah.
thought, but on the other hand, it did happen a long time ago. So we can...
in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, well, indeed. take some yeah. consolation from that part of it. But let's look at this next one. Here's kind of an interesting contrast, because this one is much closer to home. This story about the Rosetta spacecraft finding key building blocks for life in a comet. Did you happen to catch that one?
That is cool. That is really cool. And they had some evidence before, I guess, right, that the perhaps from the spectra of the comet's tail and things like that, there was probably amino acids and things like that in these comets. But this confirms it, doesn't it?
That's right. And in fact, the very thing they found in this one, the amino acid called glycine, which we use in our own bodies. You've all got glycine in your body. You use it to make proteins. This had actually been detected in a comet before, but the sample was corrupted, and there were reasons that they couldn't absolutely for sure say that there was glycine in that comet. But now, this time, for sure, 100%, yes, there's glycine out there in space. And, I got to thinking about this. What does that tell you about the fact we know there's planets everywhere, and it's looking more and more like there's just this organic soup everywhere, right? It's not limited
water
to this
everywhere.
Planet the way we water everywhere.
Yeah.
Organic
molecules
everywhere. What does that mm-hmm. say about the chances for life? It seems to me that over the last few years the odds of there being life out there in the universe have gone up a lot, haven't they?
I think so, and I think, when we get the ability to go out there and and investigate these things. Here's my prediction for what it's worth, that life will be common, that intelligent life will be exceedingly rare. But that's just,
like here on Earth.
My thought.
Yeah. Like in Congress, for example.
Oh,
just
gosh.
To give one example, right? Yeah. I think that's probably true, because the stuff seems to be everywhere. We haven't found any life anywhere outside of Earth. So the organization of the stuff is a lot less common, and we don't know how much less common, but we know it's a lot less common. What it takes to get to us, well, we know that there's a lot of
stable
speed
environment
bumps along the way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you need an extremely stable environment for a long, long time. And I think that is an exception rather than the rule out in the universe. It would just I would just guess. Of course, I don't have much to back that up, Phil. It's just kind of a feeling.
Well, one of the things this story made me think as I was reading it, I was like, oh, wow, this really lends credence to the whole panspermia idea. You know, maybe all the stuff we needed for life on this planet came from someplace else. But then you look at it and you go, well, yeah, but we didn't really need life to come from anywhere else. If all this stuff is everywhere, right?
Including here, yeah.
Yeah, unless life, the actual beginning of life is this unicorn event, which maybe it is. It could very well be. We probably didn't need spores from anywhere else to get it going here. And it could be that we're the ones sending out the spores, right? We could be the ones panspermiating the universe every time.
At least the local solar system anyway, right? So,
For sure. Yeah. We're the ones who if a meteor strikes this planet and throws debris out into orbit, there's microbes and stuff on it. Maybe they end up someplace and maybe they take hold. Plus we send objects out. We land things and we put things in orbit with our germs all over them. We've given the solar system a big case of the cooties. So,
as often as we can.
We don't know that, but the thing is, what are the chances that that'll ever take anywhere? Well, we don't know. It'll be very interesting if we get to Mars and we find life on Mars that we sent there accidentally, right? That would be that would be a wild turn of events. Now,
turns out that Mars was sterile before the 1970s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but things have been going like crazy ever since. That's right.
That's right. Well, that's cool.
Hey, speaking of the 70s, nice segue there.
Yeah.
Have you taken a look? This is kind of an older piece, but it's just so much fun. Here's what humanity wanted aliens to know about us in 1977. You've seen these two phonograph records, basically, that were placed on Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. I know Carl Sagan wrote a lot about them in the book Cosmos, and I think he talked about them in the original.
Well,
Cosmos
it was his idea.
TV show.
Those gold records were originally his idea. Yeah. So he would incorporate those those records into his fictional book and his nonfiction books. He talked about them too. So yeah, it's interesting, and of course we've all seen Starman. The whole premise behind that movie Starman was that an alien civilization found those records, right?
Found the records,
and then decided to come for a visit.
Yeah, I love it when Jeff Bridges starts talking like the UN, the General Secretary of the United Nations, who at the time was a German. He's speaking in German because he's learned a few words, right? He's got a little a smattering of this, a smattering of that, because that's what we wanted humanity to what we wanted aliens to know about humanity back in those days. Well, we've got a lot of languages. We've got music here. Listen to different music from different eras. That was on there, and we encoded photographs on there through this really wonky. Very clever, ingenious, actually, analog to digital system for encoding pictures. But we sent a bunch of scenes from Earth, and this story in Time gets a little snarky with the photos. I don't know if you saw the captions they put on some of them. You got all these kids looking at a globe, and it says, cute young Earthlings in an image of their planet, or maybe giant Earthlings in a smaller planet under their control, right? what sense are the aliens to make these pictures?
That's right.
There's a guy from Central or South America. He's out, obviously been working in the sugarcane field. He's got a cane in one hand, he's got the machete in the other hand, big smile on his face, and it says, a fully grown earthling, or maybe a demonstration of the kinds of weapons available on Earth. And
yeah, that's right.
They're all kind of like that, because indeed, without context, if you've never seen a human, what do you make of these pictures, right? What, you know, will they look at them and see the same things we see? It seems very unlikely that they would even find much recognizable in the pictures. If they did, their interpretation of them could be radically different from what was intended back in the
I like the next one.
I
like the next one. An Earth city building at sunset. Or maybe the spacecraft with which a large number of Earthlings will come find you.
Yeah, right. So basically, the whole thing is one big threat, right? We send out these pictures to let them know how evil and cunning we are and powerful. There's one of the cars that says Earth traffic jam, or maybe why Earthlings will be fleeing to move to your home planet. It goes on in that vein. Very clever.
Yeah.
But I think the point's well taken. And in fact, even Carl Sagan made this point all those years ago, that parts of it, the mathematical parts of the message, they would probably be able to interpret. The rest of it is probably just gibberish to any aliens who, you know, no one's probably ever going to find it anyway, because it's a very, very, very small needle in a huge haystack. But if they did, the chances that they would be able to make sense of it are remote, to say the least. But it was an important gesture on our part. Right, it was a very optimistic gesture on our part to say, "Here we are. This is who we are," and you know, the intention behind it was a friendly one. It was a positive one. It was a very life affirming one. And hopefully,
I wonder if there might have been a darker thing behind this too, Phil. You're of course, you know, like all of us geeks, you're a Star Trek fan. I'm sure you remember the episode Inner Light, where Picard visits a planet. Well, actually, you know, there's first a, you know, there's a probe that, you know, they approach with the Enterprise. And you know, to get into spoilers, the probe kind of intersects with or interfaces with Picard's mind, and he lives a life. And then after that, he can share with the Federation or whomever about the civilization that was, right?
We learn at the end that they were destroyed, and the whole reason
that
for this
long
exercise
since gone and
putting Picard through this whole lifetime subjectively, it actually took just a few minutes on the bridge of the Enterprise, was so that somebody would remember them, so that there would be some evidence that they were there, you know,
I'm thinking Sagan, you know, he's thinking this civilization, you know, we're in this nuclear arms race. You know, I wonder if us just putting something out there, that might be the only evidence, you know, someday that we were ever here. It's a kind of a sad thought, obviously, but I wonder if that might have been part of what he was thinking when he encouraged, you know, us to do that. I don't know. I've never heard him talk like that, but I just wonder.
Well, he was definitely aware of the possibility that we could destroy ourselves. He mentioned it frequently, and I think,
right,
you know, it's funny how poignant it becomes when you change the verb tense from we are here to we were here, you know? It's a completely different message at that point. Maybe so, but at this point we're still here, and, you know, it has barely gotten anywhere. It's gonna brush close to a star in about 40,000 – well, close, 1.8 light years away from a star in about 40,000 years. So, you know, stay tuned. We'll let you know as late breaking bulletins arise with this.
It'll be a while, but
but you know, do other things in the meantime. Don't just worry about this. We'll get back to you. Okay. What's next? Now we're going to turn the corner. These were all great Final Frontier stories. Now with just a few minutes left. Oh, we've spent all our time on the Final Frontier. Let's talk about the next big thing. And this next story actually kind of sits on the cusp between the two, right? Because we're talking about turning near-Earth asteroids into strategically placed fuel dumps. At least that was the headline. But the story, I think, is actually a bit simpler than that. Basically, what Bruce Dorminey is saying over on Forbes is, you know, everybody's talking about mining asteroids for metals, but really what they might come in handy for is just a good place to get to keep water and carbon dioxide that you can make rocket propellant out of. That in fact, asteroids might just kind of be our, he says fuel dumps, but they're almost like our little gas stations out in space, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it costs a lot to take anything into orbit, Phil. So if you can get it there, you have saved so much. And so, and really, we need to build an infrastructure in the solar system in order to get out there and do what we need to do. And, you know, hey, let's take advantage of what's already there. I think that's wise. And I think there's probably going to, we're going to find that there's a lot of stuff out there. So we just need to get out there and start.
If you can make propellant out of, you know, out of water and carbon dioxide, these elements that it turns out there's quite a bit of out there, you don't have to keep coming back to Earth for stuff, which saves you a lot in terms of time, but more importantly in terms of propulsion, as you mentioned, because you don't have to mess with that Earth gravity well. And what this becomes then is this becomes a tremendous enabler of everything you might want to do in space, right? If you've got if you've got an infrastructure that is relying on the materials there, then you're in much better shape to mine the asteroids, to settle in the asteroids, to you know to build space stations, to build solar power collection stations. Whatever you want to do out in space becomes a lot easier if you're doing it with the materials that you're finding out in space, rather than having to do this go back to Earth and get more stuff things. So I think it's a great idea, and it's a great enabler for the you know the commercial development of space. So I think if we end up with a large presence out in the solar system mining asteroids, it'll probably be relying on something like this. I think it's entirely likely that that this will be a kind of a staple. You know, we'll look back and say, oh yeah, this is we had to have that in order to make the rest of this really work. So
well,
that's cool.
And and the next one's even closer to home, and really speaks of another stepping stone or whatever to getting into space, and it's what Interplanetary Resources is doing. That one of the things they've been doing is developing space telescopes so they can see what's out there in the asteroid belt and everything else. But they're finding that hey, there's a market for turning those telescopes back around and looking at Earth.
Right.
And you can get real time data on how your crop is doing. And, you know, if you're a big commercial farmer or whatever, that, you know, or how a forest fire is progressing and how it's being fought or whatever, things like that, you know, to be able to have high quality, real time images of Earth, video really of Earth, you know, produces a lot of usable information. And so that they're using that, and you say, well, that's kind of lame. That's not what they were out to do originally. You want to go, we want to study the asteroids and find out what's out there so we can go get it. Right. Well, this to me, if you can make money with the same technology, the same infrastructure, you know, do it. And then, you know, and use that money then to get on out there. So, I think it's a wise solution, wise idea.
Oh, well, I could not agree more. To me, what this story says is that Planetary Resources. These guys are serious. They're really business people. Okay, this is a real business.
Yeah.
Okay, this is not just some lark. And as business people do, they've immediately thought of a good application for their technology that you know that hadn't occurred to them before. But if there's a buck to be made. Because it's going to be a few years before they make any money off the broader solar system, right? But hey, we got one big piece of the solar system right here under our feet that they can actually apply some knowledge to. They can do this; they call it thermographic infrared scan, and this hyperspectral analysis that they're going to provide. Also, it's a great opportunity to perfect those technologies to get them really working good, because nothing like being in production and having paying customers to drive a technology along. So I think it's all to the good that they're doing that, and I think it speaks well to them as a company and to our future in space, both that they're doing that.
Absolutely. Okay.
And speaking of, I'm sorry, I just lost my place for a moment. I got so caught up in that infographic.
Yeah, the next thing was
so
SpaceX. SpaceX.
I just wanted to mention, I'm sorry, there was one other story on Forbes about this. These guys have raised $21 million to, you know, talk about real money and a real business. This is something they're really making happening. Sorry, I just wanted to throw that in. Go ahead, Stephen.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had three Forbes stories in a row. Kudos to Forbes for staying on top of the space stuff, right?
They're doing some good
and of
space
course,
reporting,
Forbes,
yeah.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Forbes is, that's a financial magazine, right? I think this space business is getting to be important. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Space is the next big thing, Forbes is all over it. Okay, kudos
right.
to them for being on the hot new market. Now you were saying SpaceX Dragon, tell us.
Okay, SpaceX Dragon. They got their contract. They nailed down their contract here in the last couple of weeks with NASA to deliver astronauts to the ISS. That's big news, Bill, because you know we've been using Russian capsules to get. Get our astronauts back and forth to the space station. I think it's important that we have our own launch capabilities, and I think it's doubly important that it be a commercial carrier. You know, I mean, hey, you know, if this capitalism thing is important to us, hey, maybe we take advantage of it. So I think it's pretty cool that it's a private enterprise that's taking our astronauts to the ISS. Going forward.
Well, and what's great about this story is it shows how the two come together, right? Because nothing says final frontier like NASA, the ISS, astronauts going out into space to do science and research and all that kind of stuff. But oh, look at the angle here; it's a private company doing it, right? This is a real handing off of the baton from NASA, who used to manage all that infrastructure, to NASA, who is now outsourcing that infrastructure to the private sector. It says a lot about our future in space, and it says a lot about how going forward, pursuing the final frontier becomes increasingly the purview of those who are after the next big thing, right? the twain meet right there, and I think they meet in this in this next story, too. I see these as kind of closely related. The U.S. government to approve a private unmanned moon mission for next year. Now, this is not, this is not Apollo 11, right? But this is something, okay? We're talking about a private company landing, what is it, like a 20-pound payload on the surface of the moon. It'll collect data. It'll send back telemetry. It will perform a number of functions, including I think it's got a moving component that will come off, and it's hard to describe it as a rover, but a little piece, little robot that will go off and do some of its own stuff. But probably more important than that is the precedent, right? And we've talked so many times on this show about things that once belonged only to the biggest nation states, now being handed down into the private sector, ultimately, finally, into the hands of private individuals. And this is it in action, right? This is not a big company. This is not the biggest company in the world. This is certainly not a group of people that have anything like the resources that it took for NASA to land the original, what was it called, Ranger probe on the moon back in the 60s, before we did any manned exploration. I mean, those were huge multi-billion-dollar undertakings, and here we've got a small company you've probably never heard of doing it, and doing it with the government's blessing, opening up the final frontier in a way that it's almost hard even to conceive.
Yeah, and this is the first time. This is the reason this is history making. Is it's the first time any kind of private space endeavors have taken place beyond Earth orbit.
Right.
And so, like you say, a very important precedent, and that's exciting. That's a big deal.
I think so too, and I think we've made our case pretty well here, haven't we, Stephen? We have shown that it's happening. We're still interested in space as the final frontier, but it really seems to be coming on strong as the next big thing, doesn't it?
The place to go earn a buck. So that was three Forbes stories and then a Wall Street Journal story at the very end. So
there you go. So, hey, I'll say it again. I got one word for you, space. And I got one more word for you, amazing, okay? And that's what we're going to be doing come Wednesday. We've got a lineup of amazing medical news, so I hope you will all be with us next week. Stephen, great talking with you as always. And until next time, live to see it.